Open the meeting for Wednesday, September 6th, and we have a quorum. We have some recognitions and proclamations, so if you'll come forward, I'm going to call your name, Sheila. Using Lauren Knox and Jennifer Versteeds, correct my spiel for you. Okay, and so we'll come up here and we'll hand you the things. We'll take a quick picture. Anything I'm forgetting?
No.
Appreciate their good service.
Wow.
5 years for Sheila, 10 for Lauren Knox, and 15 for Jennifer.
I'll take my picture. Sheila, yours?
Thanks, Jay.
No, this is just
awesome. Can you guys turn those points me the other way? Looks great.
Right. All right, guys.
Big smiles, guys. Thank you so much.
Okay, we have a resolution proclaiming the month of September as Hunger Action Month in Lincoln County. And we have some presenters.
Ready for us?
Yeah.
Come on.
You want to read?
I'd be honored to, Mr. Chair. Whereas hunger and poverty are issues of grave concern in the United States, the state of Oregon, and Lincoln County, and whereas each month, Food Share of Lincoln County provides emergency food in excess of 80,000 pounds, serving approximately 4,500 individuals, including working families with children, senior citizens, veterans, the disabled and homeless. And whereas Food Share of Lincoln County distributed over 1 million pounds of food last fiscal year through its network of food pantries, soup kitchens, shelters, backpack programs, and other community organizations. And whereas it is important that all Lincoln County residents participate by contributing food, money, or volunteering time at a local food pantry, shelter, or soup kitchen, and by encouraging others to get involved. And whereas Lincoln County and Food Share are committed to taking steps to raise awareness about the need to combat hunger in every part of Lincoln County and to advocate for policies that improve the lives of low-income people, now, therefore, the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners does hereby proclaim the month of September 2017 as Hunger Action Month in Lincoln County, Oregon.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much. My name is Nancy Mitchell. I'm the Executive Director of Food Share of Lincoln County. I'm pretty sure we know each other. And this is one of our lovely food pantry coordinators from Toledo Pantry. This is Tanya Storm. We are both just going to share a little bit about what we do and our work and some stories about the people we serve. So once again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here today to speak on this and that you're proclaiming September's Hunger Action Month in Lincoln County. First, I want to start out by saying that our hearts go out to the folks of Texas and all the disasters that are going on there, and of course the people right here around us that are suffering from these raging fires. It makes me count my blessings every day, that's for sure. Also, I'm proud to report that 24 food bankers from the Oregon Food Bank statewide network will be heading to Texas, if not have already, to assist the Houston Food Bank in their work in trying to get everybody back on their feet. So we're pretty proud of that fact. I'd like to share a story with you about somebody who came to our food share office. You may know that we don't do direct service to the public. We're strictly the warehouse operation, but because we used to have a pantry at our location for so many years, we still have a lot of people that come to our facility looking for assistance. So this is Mary's story, and I've changed her name. Mary came to Food Share to inquire about available food programs and to ask if there was a program that could help with school clothes for her child. In talking with her further, I learned that she has a full-time job and is looking for a second job to make ends meet. She and her partner live in an RV with a toddler and a school-aged child. They have one vehicle, a phone with limited minutes, a small refrigerator that doesn't work well, so they can only shop for a few things at a time that require refrigeration. They were a two-income family, but with the illness of her partner and another medical emergency with her father, the bills started piling up and they were losing traction. She had a hard time getting connected to services because of her work hours. Therefore, it was difficult for her to get the help she needed from agencies at that time. On top of everything, she was faced with the difficult decision to leave her job to accept another job that can guarantee her full-time work through the winter, which is a challenge for many of our seasonal workers here in our community. Leaving one job for another would put her yet in another financial bind due to the way her paychecks would fall. She counted every penny before making her decision to avoid the risk of losing what they've worked so hard to keep. They're also paying for daycare for their toddler to guarantee that slot for when her partner returns to work. I don't know if many of you know that daycare is a pretty limited resource as well in this community, and you have to pay to keep your slot, whether your child is going there or not. So it's kind of a hardship for folks. I offered to make some phone calls since she had limited phone minutes and she was busy at work. Unfortunately, most resources were dried up as agency budgets were nearing the end of their funding cycle. With the help and support of a service club and its generous members, they were able to scrape up some funds to help pay for her most immediate need, which was the roof over her children's head. A couple days later, she shared with me that for the first time in a long time, she was able to enjoy a stress-free evening with her children and even read a few chapters of her book, finally feeling that they have a good chance of getting caught up and back on their feet, even if it means working two jobs for as long as it takes. So this is a tiny glimpse of the issues our families face. This was a two-income family, both working full-time. Illness happened, and it snowballs. Very responsible people doing the best they can for their kids, and this is, they end up at the door of the food bank. Individuals and families with underlying financial struggles usually reach out to food banks as a last resort, attempting to save what money they have for rent, utilities, or even gas to get to work and back to make that paycheck. The Hunger Proclamation is a reminder that high rent, low wages, and lack of resources is a formula for families and children going hungry or becoming homeless. Our network of pantries and programs are in place and ready to respond, but need year-round support to meet the need. Then we'd like to turn it over to Tanya and have her share about her program.
I'm Tanya Storm again. I am the manager of the Toledo Food Share Pantry. I've taken over the pantry January of 2016 from Angelo Stephenson, and he ran the pantry for 3 years. My story is actually a very personal story. I moved here in December of 2012. My husband had left my children and I in Tennessee, and we moved back here. I was born and raised in Toledo, Oregon, and so I moved back in with my family. I had nothing, and of course, single mom with two kids. They were young enough that I still needed to stay home with them. I had no job or anything, moved off the garage, back in the family home. But I didn't have a job or anything. I didn't have enough money. I was trying to make ends meet. I wanted to be there for my kids and take care of my kids. And so my sister told me that, there's a food pantry I'd never heard of. I was born and raised here. I'd never heard that there even was a food pantry. So I went and checked it out, and I was so grateful for any help that I volunteered on the spot and found out that, they weren't very accepting of that because there are so many people that volunteer on the spot out of gratitude that they don't really return to actually help because it's kind of hard. But I did, and started volunteering in October of 2013. So I've been working there since October of 2013. And Angelo had me work into assistant management by January of 2014. So I've been working there with him that long. But a lot of the things that we have there, a lot of our volunteers have also been shoppers there, and they've gone through the same experience that I have. They've worked through difficult times in their lives, and they've been so grateful for the pantry and what it's done for them that they have felt that need to give back to the community and have come back and worked at the pantry. We've had a lot of people who've gone on to work full-time jobs and then left the pantry because they've become back into the community, full-time members in the community, and didn't have time to work at the pantry anymore. We have some who are working full-time jobs, and now they're just part-time workers at the pantry because their jobs now don't let them work full-time at the pantry. And I think that's important to see that communication with the pantry and that relationship that's going on now. So now that I'm a manager at the pantry, I get enough through that I'm able to give back to the community so much that I think that it's a wonderful thing to be able to do for the community, and I am blessed in that, and I want to thank the community for that. So we get a lot of people in there. I'm asked often what kind of people come in. Why don't they go to DHS? Why don't they go through the government facilities? And I think that's important to know. We get a lot of people who don't yet qualify. If you want to get food stamps, you have to prove 3 months of your lack of information, your lack of resources. If you have a teenager sleeping on your couch, the teenager's homeless or the parents are gone, well, you have to wait 3 months. What do you do for 3 months? If your spouse dies and your assets are frozen, what do you do? We've had someone who's had that. You know, if you're retired and it's just not making it and you're embarrassed to ask for help, where do you go? We have a lot of that. And so that's a lot of what we do in the community, just kind of as a patch, just kind of making that work. And we get a lot of people who just, they kind of come up to the door and they kind of look in, well, I don't really know, I'm kind of, you know, they're embarrassed, but they need just a little bit of something to help them through the month. And that's a lot of what we do. So thank you for listening.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks for the great presentation, and I'd just like to ask a question, and I think, Nancy, the story you told up front kind of helps illustrate this. There was recently a report out of the state showing, you know, unemployment, recorded unemployment rate is at a record low, and yet poverty is higher than it was at the peak of recession. So what that tells me is we've got a lot of working poor still in this state. People are employed, but they're not earning enough to even make basic needs. And, you know, I fear in a county like ours, where so many of the jobs are seasonal and part-time, I know this is a big question, but do you see any path to where we get to a point where we, you know, I'm glad Food Share has been there for so long and is doing such a wonderful job, but maybe where the community can ever become less dependent on this program and programs like it?
Well, one of the things we've been doing for quite a few years now is, you know, what they term as root cause work. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we've been doing specifically in Lincoln County is the Cooking Matters curriculum. And we've been fortunate enough to receive funds from different grantors and the community at large to hold these classes, which is a 6-week course on basic cooking skills. And the Cooking Matters curriculum was actually developed somewhat around food pantry types food. So it's a big staple in our food supply are dry beans. So unless you grew up with a mom who cooked dry beans, you may not know how to deal with a bag of dry beans. So this is back to basics, because, you know, a lot of that was lost in generations, you know, past. So that's one thing that we're trying to do to a bag of beans. A 2-pound bag of beans can really stretch for a family meal for several days. And if they have to buy it at the grocery store, it's very cheap. So, you know, our program was developed to respond to a crisis. You know, absolutely not a penny in the house, you know, in the bank, not a piece of food in the cupboard. You could get to a pantry and get relief. But at this point, like you just pointed out, it's still not enough. We have to dig a little bit deeper and teach people these skills, and maybe along with that, budgeting, you know, classes and budgeting education. And just a lot of, like Tanya was saying, community support and helping each other and helping our neighbors. And, you know, I would like to add lower rents and higher wage jobs would help a lot. Yeah. Great question. Thank you.
So, Tanya, you're the coordinator for Toledo. And, Nancy, as you pointed out, your location is really a warehouse that distributes to the pantries. Where are the other pantries in the county?
We have Lincoln City has Pantry, Depot Bay, Sillette's, Toledo, Newport, Walport, and then Nashville, which serves both Benton and Lincoln County residents.
Nashville.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so there, with the exception, I guess, of Yas, there's a pantry in each of the at least incorporated cities in the county, and then, of course, Nashville, which is just about as far east as you can get, still be in the county.
So. Right.
Actually, technically, isn't it?
Is it
over the county line, or is she? But I know.
We're well, that's not
all. She's
yes.
in Lincoln County.
She's in right Lincoln County.
Oh, that's
close
right.
to the
yeah.
line.
Very yeah, close. Because
yeah.
they get a lot of their food out of the Albany.
Yeah. Right, because a lot of their yeah. clientele is folks who live in Benton. But
yeah. yeah, a lot of need out there. There's
oh, yeah.
no resources out there
yep.
to speak of.
You do great work.
And,
you. Serves a lot of people in need.
Thank you.
So, do other states have a similar program, and is it the scale that our state is?
Not really. You know, many states have, you know, several satellites of food banking operations, but Oregon is one of the unique states. I think at this point, Rhode Island might be the only other state in the United States that has a networked state operation. So there's 21 regional food banks in the state of Oregon, and there's one included in Southwest Washington there just across the river. So there's 21 regional food banks that coordinate and share resources. We meet quarterly, and we share. We kind of blanket the state of Oregon as a whole group, and then we, you know, have our own regions within Oregon. So it's a very well-organized and a very collaborative network for Oregon.
So one of the things that I've often heard is Oregon has one of the highest poverty rates in the state, and I'm wondering, is it because we're doing a better job of contacting these people and counting them than other states? Because I still struggle with the belief that we're that much higher than other states. I mean, poverty is everywhere.
Right.
Is it the statistical gathering basis? You're an expert in it.
I don't know. My feeling is it's largely because rural Oregon has really never recovered from the collapse of the timber industry, and that layered on some of the national trends, the fact that you know, automation, decline of the labor movement and private industry, that you know, some of those outsourcing, those are national trends, but then when you layer on top of it the fact that rural Oregon's economy never has truly recovered from what happened 30 years ago. To me, those are the main reasons.
I would have to agree with that, yeah.
Also, the variation on that, I think when you look at the economic engine of the state, we don't have a large manufacturing base in durable goods, which many states do, and I think that provides a base of employment. But certainly the demise of the timber products and commercial fishing, too, has had a big impact.
Wait a minute. Commercial fishing, we're setting records almost every year the other way. There are some fisheries that struggle, but don't
take it.
Yeah. But our total production's up. It's changed a lot.
That's what I should have said. I think with regulations and the change in the industry, it doesn't have the impact that it had historically.
It doesn't employ as many lower-income people, and that's what may have happened with a lot of our jobs in the state. We have the employment there, but it's in the upper level, and when the industries have changed, it's left the lower income out and to struggle. Right?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you know, one of the ongoing debates is over the minimum wage, and if you look at if it would, and of course, you know, there's strong arguments made on both sides, but if you looked at if, say, in 1968 it had been indexed to inflation, that would be much higher than it is now, that just economically non-skilled labor is not valued at the level it once was. And so, you know, a whole lot of trends, I think, have gotten us to this point. It hasn't happened overnight. It hasn't been one cause. And
well, the reason is,
we're not going to get out of it overnight either.
Let me.
Yeah.
I think in order to attack a problem, you have to understand a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still not fully sure how the problem exists. And just like now we're dealing with the maritime industry, and Doug's working on it, trying to understand why this industry has showing no jobs when we know that they are. It seems like to me like we should be going and trying to understand the problem more thoroughly and why other states would ever be higher or lower than us before we can start to attack the problem. It's one thing to get food, which we need to do.
Right.
No question about it. There's the need there. But I think we can do a better job at trying to understand the problem so we can try to change it. And if it is really the federal government's fault, we should be telling them it is. If it, that industry was that catastrophic, we should have gathered statistics to show it. Because most people understand statistics and can show it, then maybe we can have a leg to stand on to try to fix it.
So. Right, I agree. I mean, there's so many factors and so many variables. And I think right now housing is so catastrophic that is just a trickle-down effect for people that are living in their cars and couch surfing and in hotels, and it eats up all the resources, and then there's nothing, and so where do you go from there? I always remember a story, and I think it was maybe a story you told, Fishner Hall, about $1 million
Murray.
Yes. Yeah.
It was written up in the New Yorker magazine several right. years ago. Famous story about the cost of homelessness that a lot of people, you'll find people who say, well, gee, homelessness is a shame, but it's really not impacting me. And this was after a man, I think it was in Reno, Nevada, Army veteran, PTSD, severe alcoholism problem. After he passed away, 20 years living on the street from the cumulative effects of his alcoholism, to street patrol officers who had kind of dealt with him throughout his life and, despaired of ever getting him on a good track but kept trying to work with him, they just started pulling records of what his arrests, incarceration, hospitalizations had cost the public systems, and was well over $1 million. And that inspired similar studies that showed that, that wasn't an outlier, that's actually very typical. But then the problem is, I really have always believed that if we reoriented our public systems to get folks like that the long-term help and support that they need, that we'd see cumulative savings. But unfortunately, the expense is at one part of the system, and maybe then the savings show up at a different part of the system, so it's hard to get there, but I think people are trying to move things in that direction.
Right.
Well, we're not going to fix the problem here. We have three relatively yep. intelligent people that have spent some time in government and local government, and we're open for suggestions of how to work to change the problem. And I'm sure that all three of us agree.
Absolutely.
We appreciate that very much. Also, I just wanted, if I could, just in closing, thank you again for the proclamation and for yourselves and your employees in Lincoln County to kick it off sometime this month by hosting the County Employees Food Drive. We look forward to that. It's to me, it's a very good example of what you can do to take action to fight hunger in our community. So we appreciate the fact that you're going to take the lead on this and get it started.
Happy to do that.
Yep.
And the first thing we'll do is adopt the proclamation. Mr. Chair, I move that we proclaim the month of September 2017 as Hunger Action Month in Lincoln County.
And I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Adoption of the consent calendar. Is there anything you'd like to highlight or change on the consent calendar?
I'll move for approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. We move down, no public hearings, to decision and action items relating to tobacco, smoke, and nicotine-free county property, and amending LC 7-550. This is a second reading.
Yes, Commissioners. Is there any request that this ordinance be read in full?
No.
Hearing none, then I'd like to read it by title only. This is ordinance number 496 relating to tobacco, smoke, and nicotine-free county property and amending LCC 7.550, 7.570, and 7.580. And this is, as you noted, the second reading of this particular ordinance. We've discussed this numerous times in previous months and come to the point where we're ready to actually adopt this particular ordinance. We have some representatives from Health and Human Services here who have assisted us during this long process in developing the policies and the language to accomplish really this pretty major a change in county policy that makes us basically tobacco-free, extending beyond just smoking to tobacco-free. So unless there's any questions about the ordinance at this point, I think we're ready for a motion to adopt.
Yeah, take a motion.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt ordinance number 496 relating to tobacco, smoke, and nicotine-free county property and amending LCC 7.550, 7.570, and 7.580.
I'll second it, but I have a question.
Okay, I'll answer your question before or after.
I'd like to ask a question before we take a vote.
Okay.
Last time we discussed this, I asked about a review date. I think we decided January 1st of 2019.
That's right, and that's noted both on our calendars and then noted in the minutes from last time.
Okay,
so we will come back and review this by January of 2019.
But not in the ordinance itself.
Not in
the
ordinance itself. Okay.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. We move to item B. Authorization of emergency contract for the repair of North Beaver Creek County Road 602. Thank you for bringing this last resolution.
Thanks for all the good work.
Morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
Morning, Director.
We're here asking for your authorization of emergency contract to do some repair work on the North Beaver Creek slide. As you remember, back in April of this year, a very large section of hillside started moving due to the saturating rains of the entire winter. It just happens that our road is in the middle of the slide. As soon as we could, we actually got Foundation Engineering on board. They did some extensive studying of this slide. Basically, we did the visual thing, and then we also had them drill some monitoring wells in the road to figure out the depth of the slide and actually what level the water table was. We've received that information. We received basically what they suggested was our best option at trying to stabilize this slide. It entails drilling horizontal drains into the slide to try to intercept the water to basically dewater the slide. The water is actually the cause of the movement. It's a layer of water between basically sedimentary rock and the dirt is what it is. It slicks it up and the thing starts to move. So, there is basically one prominent drilling company that does this work. They're out of Eugene, Jensen Drilling. I don't want to say they're sole source, but they're sole source basically Willamette Valley West. They actually have a window of opportunity by the end of this month to actually do the work. We received a quote from them. What I need is basically the approval to go ahead with their quote, enter into a contract with Jensen to complete the work. The idea here is that we can get the work completed prior to the rainy season, because once the rains start, the work becomes a lot more hazardous, and depending on how hard it starts to rain and how soon, if the slide starts to move again, then it almost makes it impossible to do the drilling at that time.
So, Roy, I've been down and looked at this spot. This is a substantial amount of money for drilling. Is there another alternative to that road by in another location, or is that the way it's got to be?
There really isn't any alternate route. And the thing is, building an alternate route would cost 10 times what this quote is.
Right. The reason why I'm concerned is that kind of soil on the side of that mountain. If you cut into it anymore, it's actually made exasperate itself because it's so broken. And
yeah, well, it's an ancient slide. It's well known. I mean, you would if you were to do something, you'd have to move the basically the road to the other side of the creek. There's no way to get away from this slide, basically where the road is now.
Yeah.
And so, and building new road is extremely expensive. There really isn't any good alternative because the North Beaver Creek runs down that valley. If you were to try to get around it, you'd basically end up with two bridges. You'd be working in what was probably would be considered wetland, which would tie us up for 3 years just to try to get the permits. In the meantime, winter comes, the road starts moving again, and as much as it was moving last April, I can't guarantee you that we'd be able to keep up with that slide and keep that road open.
Well, the reason for my questions is even installing drains into this is questionable. If you could have the whole thing slip and take the drains away, let's hope it doesn't. Historically, they've been pretty good at dewatering these, but if it does...
There are no guarantees.
Okay,
this my point. This is the most reasonable and what they feel would be the most effective way to try to stop a slide. It's been proven time and time again. Lincoln County has done this kind of installation three other times over the last 20 years. It's actually worked every time, so we're 3 for 3 so far.
A lot of these on the Highway 20 project, didn't they?
They put in miles of horizontal drains.
Miles of piping on the Highway 20.
And that's exactly the same thing. It's basically to take the subsurface water out and to try to keep things from moving. I think that they were fairly successful out there, at least so far. It's proven to be fairly successful. This isn't anything new. It's proven. But it's not guaranteed.
Can I ask a question? So I assume because this is essentially sole source that this, from a legal standpoint, this meets all our requirements.
It does. This is we're doing this under Lincoln County Code 7.0802 to declare an emergency. And it's not the sole source is part of what's the process, but it's really the process that you got to get it done.
We know that the
rains will start very soon, so you have to get it done. I do want to note that it's not just the contract for the drilling, but there'll be some additional agreements we'll have to do. Part of the project actually is going to occur off the right-of-way, and so we'll need to use some agreements with adjacent property owners. And so this would authorize all the necessary contracts to get the project completed.
Okay, let's quit talking. Give me a motion.
Okay,
let's
get it done sooner. I have a question. The bid, what we're talking, roughly $58,000, $59,000. Is that the entire cost of the project?
No. That is actually the cost of the drilling. Okay. We're going to have some additional costs. We're going to have to pay the foundation engineering. There is also some stabilization that needs to be done to the face of the slide prior to winter. And we can do some of that ourselves. Some of it's going to have to be contracted out, but they're very small contracts. Total, we're going to be somewhere still under $100,000 for the entire project.
So, sorry, but one more question, Mr. Chair. Then when it says authorizing an emergency contracts, plural, are we just authorizing this contract?
No. You're
going to
authorize
the other contracts?
All contracts associated with completing this project. So what you're doing is declaring the project's an emergency, and then it authorizes the Public Works Director to enter into whatever contracts are necessary to accomplish this project.
And
you're
expecting, though, even if with multiple contracts, it will be less than $100,000.
Yes.
And that's within your budget.
Actually, it is, only because we lucked out, or didn't luck out. We actually set money aside for the repair of the Ekman Creek culvert that got held up because of permits, and that actually won't happen until next fiscal year. Therefore, I do have money in the budget to cover this.
Okay. Then, Mr. Chair, I would move that we authorize the necessary emergency contracts for repairs to North Beaver Creek Road, County Road number 602.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes. And it might rain tomorrow.
Well, a little bit of rain to dampen the dust is fine, but if you remember right, last year it started raining in October and it never quit.
It usually quits and starts about October 15th.
It only rained two times last year. Yeah. The first time was 45 days and the second time was about 60 days.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that we don't get a repeat of that, but hard telling. All right, thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, we move down to reports. And it looks like elected officials' reports, commissioners' reports.
I'm going to miss next week's meeting. I will be in New York City for a two-day workshop funded with a federal grant. Be attending with another Oregon County Commissioner and just a handful of other people from around the United States. This is another follow-up on the Stepping Up initiative, and we're going to be working with a whole team of folks trying to develop essentially a plan, you know, how to engage counties that aren't on board with this effort yet, and also how to work with state agencies on an ongoing basis, because frankly we've got some state agencies who are very receptive and wanting to advance this project, and others that are more, how shall I say, still operating in a old siloed mode of operating and thinking, and hopefully these are some of the best folks in the country on this kind of thing, that they'll be able to give us some strategies to keep moving this momentum forward, both locally for Lincoln County and around Oregon.
Do you want to mention your comments last Wednesday morning in Toledo?
Oh, last Thursday, yes. No, that's right.
Time passes fast.
Yeah, last Thursday. That was a very nice ceremony on Main Street in Toledo. Representative David Gomberg sponsored a bill in the legislature that provided for placement of two signs, which, if they're not up already, will be up at some point this week at the East Highway 20 junction, honoring the Johnson brothers of Toledo, who two of them lost their lives in the Vietnam War. That there were, I think it was 39 families nationally and four in Oregon that lost two sons in that war. And so Representative Gomberg sponsored the legislation. The county provided the funding to pay for creation and erection of the signs. And on Main Street, we had a very nice, well-attended ceremony to formally dedicate the signs and remember the Johnson brothers and the Johnson family.
Nicely done, Commissioner.
Thank you.
I'll just report quickly that I had the opportunity to have lunch with Michael Zamore, who is the Chief of Staff with Senator Merkley's office. Also joining us was Stacy Joachimson. I apologize, Stacy. But anyhow, I had the opportunity to have lunch with two of them. Was an opportunity to talk about marine research and the development, economic impacts there. Talked about port activities, both the Port of Toledo and the Port of Newport. An opportunity to talk about the need for support for Medicare and the poverty levels within our county, and how a small reduction in that funding could have wide-ranging impacts on the level of services that we're able to provide to especially the elderly. And also had an opportunity to talk about the commercial fishing industry and the balance that we need to maintain between the development of the ocean for renewable energy and to do that in cooperation with the commercial fishermen so that both industries are able to continue to thrive. So it was a good lunch and a chance to spend some time more or less one-on-one.
Okay. We move down to constituent input.
them on the list as we move forward. So my name is Patty George. I reside in Toledo, Oregon. I don't know, some of you might know me. My father and I volunteered for many years with the Lincoln Pops Orchestra. He was a pianist. My mother and I worked in many of the restaurants. I started in Depot Bay at the Sea Hag when Nellie Munson was still there, and Wes Farmer and Jack Herford and Vaughn Taunton, my father's school childhood friend, all brought a boat through the Panama Canal. I've seen a lot of history in Newport. I worked at the school district. I worked at the Toledo Newport and Select Middle Schools, managed the Toledo Middle School. I have many family members in this community. I've had many experiences. I could be here talking about many things today. I could talk about the roads. I could talk about a lot of empty businesses up by Moby Dix where I used to work, a lot of empty windows, a lot of issues in this county. But I'm really here today on the behalf of my family. My sister, Cindy, had a medical dispensary in Toledo. I don't know if any of you remember my folks having a problem with a well on their property towards the end of their lives. We took care of them at our home until they passed, along with my sister's husband's mother. I know you all have a lot of commissions and meetings that you go to and groups that you are members of, traveling to New York and going out to lunch. I know that you've worked with the seniors. I'm here to tell you that when my mother was put into the rehab center over here behind the hospital, we had to take her out of there because they didn't have soap in there. I made several complaints about it, but I'm here to tell you one thing. The health departments never inspect that place. So I implore you to spend the night there like I did a couple of times. I took my mother out of there. I could be here talking about a lot of things in this county. I have a lot of people that I interact with and have throughout the years. But I'm here today because of some comments that were made on social media about my sister, who, in an act of protest over her business being bullied out of town, she was, by the way, not only bullied out of business, but presented with a $78,000 bill for attorneys that somebody, I guess you guys hired from Portland to come down and put her out of business. And it was a great success. We are not a wealthy family. We're not one of your mill families that have made a lot of money in this county fishing or anything. We're just folks. I was a cook in many restaurants when Judge Little Hales and all those guys used to come up to Moby Dix to sit and have coffee with Milt Price. I know people. But let me tell you, when I hear that on social media, Mr. Hall, you're accusing my sister of coming in here and doing a striptease, I'm here to tell you that might be how you think of it in the evening. But to me, it was a protest about a compassionate woman who has been through a lot in the last few years. And we've lost two of my brothers, both of my parents, a mother-in-law, and my dearest niece to an accident on these county roads. Now, then, so when you talk disparagingly about her protesting the fact that her business has been run out of town, which was a legitimate legal business, or I hear that Mr. Terry Thompson is out in the community making disparaging remarks about my deceased niece, and I'm going to tell you right now, Mr. Thompson, I don't come up here and speak to you every day, and I don't do it lightly. I take my family and my community very seriously. I'm here as a law-abiding citizen to ask you and this commission. I understand you own property next to where my sister's store was. I don't know if you all have a vendetta against my family because of the well issue, why you had to take the $20,000 off of my parents' property. Look, they spent the last years of their lives living somewhere else that we paid for. because they couldn't live at home. I don't know what the problem is here, but I'm going to ask you, I'm going to implore you out of the decency of representatives of this county to refrain from saying anything about my deceased niece when she's no longer alive to defend herself and her reputation. I'm also going to ask that you not depict my sister, who has, yeah, been through some emotional tragedies as a mental case, or that she's lost her mind or anything else. I don't think it's dignified, and I don't think it's something that our commission and our commissioners should have online posted or should be caught at a party talking about. I'm just here today to implore you to show some decency to my family and to show a little respect for my deceased niece, who would be here today speaking on my behalf if somebody had said something deplorable about me. I'm here as a community member who's volunteered, who's done a lot. You know, I know you guys go to a lot of meetings, you make a lot of per diem for those meals and all that stuff, and you look good, you pat yourself on the back for putting up signs and doing, but I don't know that you ever know that a woman who had no money raised money to get helmets for kids at a skate park so they wouldn't crack their brains on the cement with no help from you. A woman who used to go to the school and read to the kids who couldn't read, volunteered at that school. You don't know that because you weren't there in the mornings with those little kids. A woman, my sister Cindy George, who tried desperately to show some compassion in this community to keep people who are at the end of their life for cancer treatments. I'm imploring you to show some common decency to my family. I just don't like to go out into my community and hear your constituents tell me about stories. And I hear them. I don't want to hear them anymore.
I guess I'm not supposed to respond to this.
You can.
I'm going to say this. Your niece testified. Just stay on. You made your comments. Your niece testified before us. She was a very eloquent. I was impressed by her, and I respected her. Now, I don't know what your friend said, but this town is loaded with rumors of people who like to make comments to try to tear people down.
I understand.
And you understand that?
Yeah, I do.
Believe me, I had a lot of respect for her and her testimony every time I met her. Now, that's all I want to say.
And could I say something as well? One thing you did leave out was that comment I made was in response to your sister telling
you. No, I don't think it's. I do not.
And I will apologize. Listen. Now, and I will say that was not appropriate, but it was a snap-tempered reaction, and it was beneath the dignity of my office, so I will publicly apologize for that right now.
I appreciate your honesty, sir.
And I will apologize because I don't know what was said by whom or where, but anything I said, I did very much respect her.
Just know that she was such a good person that the only thing should ever come out of anybody's mouth about Angelica Guinea is what a tragic loss it was to this community and what a compassionate, wonderful person she was. That's what I want to hear, ladies and gentlemen, come out of anybody's mouth about her, okay?
Okay. Please introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name is Cynthia George, and I brought the copies of the conversations that we've had. It's sad that in the 4.5 years that we came before you, this is the most communications I've ever gotten from anybody in this commissioner meetings. Nobody's ever talked about anything. So I appreciate the apology, but I wasn't focusing towards you. What I said personally was, anyone who wished to see my demise, and there's been plenty of them, not for anything other than who I am as a human being, Not because I ran a bad business, not because I didn't provide a wonderful service for our community or anything else, but because I'm a little abrupt, but I've been pushed to the point of being abrupt. Mr. Thompson, a young man came straight to me. First it was his mother, and then it was this young man who came and sat in my living room and told me exactly what was said. And there was something about an interview that you were traveling in regards to the video that I posted of my protest. And then you mentioned her accident, and you accused her of being on drugs. That's what was said.
Never accused.
Now,
never accused.
Oh, well, then maybe you just referenced that she may have been. Maybe you were just guessing. Maybe you've never seen documents, but you know what? I haven't either. I have never seen a report on any of this because I'm the mother. And I hired that young man, that fisherman that was in the vehicle with her. I went out and got him an attorney so that I personally don't have to suffer anymore. Okay? So eventually, we'll all deal with whatever actually happened. But I know she was sitting. I know when she left my home. See, nobody ever asks. You just, everybody talks. I know what happened right up until the point of impact. And I know she was sitting in a safety zone. And I've been told they were traveling at 65 miles an hour. But did anybody get written up for that accident? Going above the speed limit in a safety zone? No. Did anybody verify they were traveling without headlights as the truck drivers reported? And spotlights came on her? No. Okay? I don't know what actually took place. We may never know. Okay.
It's a tragedy.
It is a tragedy. And she doesn't deserve to be slandered by anybody. Okay? So, I've closed my doors. You'll all be glad to know. Okay? But I'm filing an appeal. The landlord's filing an appeal. Because what is taking place here is wrong. And if that property does not revert back, as you've all claimed, they violated the zoning ordinance and these special stipulations and all this, and so he's got to revert that back to RR. He's got to revert that back to rural residential. Let's hope we don't see another dispensary going in there. Let's hope it isn't connected to somebody in this community. Okay? Because it's not right. And what you guys have all created, and you know, I sat there and I watched the February 26th meeting it once again, where you guys all said you backed Rob Bovet and that bill to draft up these moratoriums and all these things. And so you've all been involved in the legislative process and pushing all these bills. And you know what you've created? A market for medical growers. They have no place to put their excess. No place. 2018, they may. This year, there's no place for any of that to go. So what you did is you took that coal memorandum and you violated every part of it. And now, Rob's running around and he's pointing the fingers at the medical community. We're all a bunch of criminals. He's going on the radio. They're doing all these things, right? Well, the racketeering cases that got filed, those are OLCC growers. So, greed is going to bring this all down. When it started out helping the sick, and you all got greedy. So you guys have a good day.
Love ya.
I love you too.
Sorry, I didn't sign in. I was late. My name is Jessica Burkert, and I am a...
Just a second. We take your time, sign in, then, so we can hear you on the recording.
I hate being my picture taken just to be known. I am Jessica Burkhart, former employee of Going Green West. I can definitely tell you that the food pantry is busier because there is 100% more people coming into Oregon. That is why it is so much busy and so in need. I see so many more homeless people around Newport lately. There's a box guy living in a box with a cooler and everything just up the street there, pushing his home that's on carts around our town. Is that right? No. And for every single house that's in this county, there's 25 applicants for one house. So it's the renter's market. So you know what these renters are doing? They're taking and skyrocketing the rent price to $1,600, $1,700 for a two-bedroom house in Toledo. You know, it's not right. That's not right. And then I just want to say that I loved my job at Going Green West. It was one of the best jobs I've ever had, and I won't ever find one like it. And my coworker Chris back there also worked with me. And we will never find a job like that with a family so inner. We were so close. And it really, really sucks that it has to shut. It really, really does suck. I don't know where I'm going to get my medicine because I will not go to any of these recreational places. I will only grow my own marijuana. It is horrible that these people charge $18 for a gram of marijuana that will only last a half a day. And that's if you make a cup of tea with it. If you don't make a cup of tea with it, it'll only last a few minutes. So, I mean, it is, you guys, you claimed that there was 20 other dispensaries that we could go and get our medicine from. That's true, there is. But there is no poor people dispensary. Absolutely none. I cannot afford to go to any of these dispensaries. I don't even want to because they're not even personable and they don't know what the heck they're talking about. I have gained so much knowledge and I have sat there and picked out, these people come to me and they say, I have this shooting pains that go through my legs. I don't know what it's caused by, I don't know what it's from, but I need help. And I sit there and go through the rubs and the concentrates and everything. And I say, if you don't want to get high, do this. If you do want to get high, do this. If you need pain relief, do this. You know, it's not just a drug. It is medicine. And I took 3 CBD capsules this morning just so I could get out of bed and come here. It helps. My bulging discs in my back, I don't want to take opiates. I don't want these stinking Samaritan to control my life. So I take CBD capsules and marijuana throughout the day to control my pain levels so that I am okay, clear, and can handle my life. And the lady who came in and talked here, Mr. Mann's wife, she's an amazing woman. And that woman brought forth so many points, so many true points. I don't understand why there was such a problem. I really don't. We could have compromised and worked things out. It should have been that way. And instead, it was just a shutdown constantly. I lived through this for the last 2-3 years, listening to you guys back and forth with the paperwork. I read all of it. All of it. I read all the online stuff. I read the paperwork. It is just completely ridiculous. Completely. Bernie, whatever, you guys took the 1,000 mark away from the, because he's 1,000 feet within a state park. So you guys took that away so that he would be allowed to stay there. The beaches and OCD is allowed to stay there, and they're 1,000 feet within a state park because the beach is a state park. And that should not be allowed right there in tourist town. Is that what we want? Is that what we want as a county, is to be known as, hey, we got marijuana. We got marijuana over here. No, it's a medicinal thing. Medicinal. Not to be shoved in everybody's face. Not to be downtown Toledo where all the kids walk by. My kids go, hey, mom, can I go in there? And I'm like, no, you can't go in there. It's like there's motorcycles and artwork on the walls and the green dragon, and that invites people in. But then I have to tell my kids, no, 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 you can't go in there. So I'm exhausted, and I am tired of listening to all of the put-downs on medical dispensaries and medical use, period. And I hate that mainstream pot is becoming the new thing, because it should not be mainstream. It's horrible to be mainstream. I do appreciate that you guys are trying to fix the roads around here, and I do appreciate if when Highway 20's road that fell over gets fixed, I will appreciate that a heck of a lot. And I'm glad that you guys are supporting Food Share. I really, really, really appreciate that, because I do go there myself at least once every 6 months. So I appreciate all that. Thank you for listening.
My name is Chris Gazzetti. I'm a former employee of Going Green West Coast Compassion Center. So I'd just like to let everybody know that as of last week, I was employed full-time, and I had no problems. All my bills were paid. Now, as of 4 days ago, that's all gone away. And I'm wondering which one of you commissioners, since you've decided to take away my job from me, is going to hire me. Because I don't see any opportunity in this town, in this county. I had a great job. Now it's gone. I'd like to know why that is. Because of some imaginary stipulations from the 1980s on some property, some imaginary zoning code that you guys shuffle around paperwork every 4 or 5 days to fit your agenda. I'm wondering what it is. Can you give me a clear reason why I don't have a job today? Is it because of Cindy's attitude with you? Can you tell me what it is?
You can make your comments, that's fine.
Okay. Well, I'd like to let you all know that on my last ballot, I voted for all three of you. And that will be the last time that I do that.
I'll make sure that nobody votes for you guys.
Thank you very much.
Okay, with that...
enjoy your executive session on your lawsuit, too.
Executive session is the next tough subject, according to ORS 192.660, to discuss litigation matters. Mm-hmm. And so do we need...
We need to clear the room while we discuss this. This is an executive session, sorry. It's not.
Okay, and then we'll come back and adjourn now, or?
Yeah, come back in a couple minutes.
Okay.